May I have your attention, please? Watch over everyone. My name is Sonny Israel Yop Hawkins. I'd like to serve forever as a priest starting very soon. It's a privilege and the honor to present to you the sons and daughters of Israel now and through century. May I have your attention, please? My name is Sonny Israel Zafania Hawkins, and I'd like to serve you forever as a priest starting very soon. It is a privilege and honor to present to you the sons and daughters of Yisrael now entering the sanctuary. And now I'd like to present to you the son of Yisrael, Ben Hawkins. Shabbat shalom, everyone. You may be seated. And the peace of God be with each and every one of you. The title of my speech is Read the Book of the Law. Positive Law 10 says, read, study, and meditate on the Book of the Law. Please turn to Deuteronomy 6 verse 7, found on page 152. And you must teach them diligently to your children and talk about them when you sit in your house, when you walk on the road, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. We must read the Book of the Law every day. Please turn to Yeshua 1:8, found on page 178. This book must never be missing from your mouth, and you must meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to observe and do all that is written in it. For then your way will be blessed, and then you will be greatly successful. The Book of Yahweh is where we find Yahweh's laws. The first five books of the scriptures from Genesis through Deuteronomy is called the Torah, or Book of the Law. But it is not enough just to read the laws, we must diligently practice them too. When we do, it will be our righteousness, as Deuteronomy 6 verse 25 says. The more we study and practice righteousness, the more we can rejoice and bring rejoicing to others, and our rejoicing will be great in Father Yahweh. But remember, we always need a mighty teacher, and Yahweh has given us one in these last days, Pastor Yisro Hawkins. If we read the Book of the Law, it will get stuck in our brains, and we will teach the world Yahweh's laws of peace. So learn what to teach and teach what you learn. For my last scripture, please turn to Isaiah 54, verse 13. All children will be taught by Yahweh, and great will be the peace of your children. And now I'd like to turn over. And now I'd like to turn over to Son of Israel Abel.
It's a great honor and privilege to present to you Son of Israel Abel, Deacon Buffalo Bill Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. You may be seated, may the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Today I'm going to be talking about getting God's names out of our mouths. Now, first please turn to Hosea 2. Hosea 2 and verse 17. It says, for I will take away the names of Balaam, the Lord's, God's, Elohim, goddesses, out of her mouth, and their names will no longer be called upon. Notice here, Yahweh promises to remove the names of God from the mouths of his people. Now, if you look down on the page, chapter 4 and verse 12, it says, my people ask counsel at their stocks, Asherah poles, and their poles of wood give them oracles and instruct them. For the spirit of their whoredoms, God El worship, has caused them to err, and they have gone whoring from under their father. Now the names of gods are used in almost everything we do, including the days and months. This is how hard this worldly system has worked to remove Yahweh's name and have the people call on the gods' names. In Jeremiah 23 and it talks about the people calling on the gods' names instead of Yahweh's name, and how they forget Yahweh's name for the names of the gods. Sunday worship is the worship of the sun god Baal, of which Yahweh said he would remove from his holy people. The days of the weeks and months are examples of worshiping the creation rather than the creator. Take, for example, Thursday, the Norse god of thunder, or Saturn, the god of harvest. They're giving honor to the gods instead of Yahweh for the blessings they receive. Romans 1, verse 25 talks about worshiping the creation. Now, Stephen spoke to his accusers about the worship of gods in Acts 7 and verse 39, whom our fathers would not obey, but they rejected him. So in their hearts they turned back to Egypt, saying to Aaron, make us gods, Elohim, before us. As for this Moshe, who brought us up out of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And they made the image of a calf. In those days, and offered the sacrifice of God El, and rejoiced in the works of their hands. And then Yahweh turned and gave them up to worship the host of heaven, just as is written in the book of the prophets. Was it to me you brought sacrifices and offerings in the wilderness 40 years, O house of Israel? No, but you have lifted up the idolatrous temple of Moloch, your god El, and Kayun, your star god, Saturn, the star of your god El, which you have made for yourselves, and I will carry you away beyond Babylon. Now, we do not say their names, the names of these gods. In page 81 of the Let the Children Also Come to Me, it shows here, we do not say their names. Today, the world has been deceived into following gods. Many of the words in the English language started in god worship. These words were used to worship the gods and goddesses. When certain words are said, it gives glory to the gods. The people of Yahweh do not want to give any glory to the gods. We give all glory and honor to Father Yahweh. This is why we cannot say some words. Yahweh is taking away all the names of gods from us, so we may be perfect in all things. Hosea 2:16-17. And it will be in that day, Yahweh says, that you will call me Ishi, my husband, and will no longer call me Baali, my lord. For I will take away the names of Balaam, the Lord's gods, Elohim, and goddesses out of her mouth, and their names will no longer be called upon. We must remember that these words are said throughout the world today, and can be hard sometimes to learn not to say something you have said your whole life. We do not say their names. Turn to Psalms 16 and verse 4. The sorrows are multiplied who seek after God's Elohim. We do not offer their blood gift. We do not say their names. Satan has deceived the whole world, as Revelation 12:9 says. She has deceived the whole world into worshiping the gods. And because of this, here's the results of what is going on because of the worship of gods and calling on the gods. We have wars taking place in the world. Armed conflicts. This is an article from Wikipedia. And this shows the wars with the most fatalities and casualties. On the top there, I don't know if you can see it or not, it says Syria, and then it's South Sudan, Iraq, Afghanistan, Nigeria, Mexico, Pakistan, Ukraine, Somalia, Sudan, Central African Republic, Libya, Israel and Pakistan, Palestine, Yemen, Cameroon, Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Egypt. These are all the rank. And then here in 2017, Syria, this list, Myanmar is in the list now, Ethiopia, the Philippines, Yemen, and Pakistan. So you see from the worship of the gods that Yahweh said not to even use their names, we see the results. The gods are named from everything in this present time, including even the planets are named for gods. God worship is in the homes of everyone who owns a worldly calendar. Now on page 42 of the Let the Children Also Come to Me book, it talks about the days of the week. Now Sunday is named after the sun god who sailed around the rim of the world. Well, I'll read this on the top. The days of the week. Ancient people worship many gods and even named the days of the week in honor of the gods. They worship the sun, moon, stars, and created stories called myths to explain what they did not understand about Yahweh's creation. Yahweh's people do not say the names of gods in any reference or worship. These names of the week may be used to clarify time or day of the week. Named after the sun god, Sunday was named after the sun god who sailed around the rim of the world from the west to the east so he could ride in the east, so he could be in the east for his ride throughout the sky and dawn. His journeys throughout the sky gave daylight to the world. Today the world goes to their churches in the honor of the sun god. Monday was named for the moon goddess whose gentle light covered the sleeping world as she came each night to shine upon her loved ones. Tuesday is named after the god Tyre, who sacrificed his hand in order to protect his city's safety. Wednesday is named after the god Odin, who gave up one of his eyes to be put in the well of wisdom to allow him to see more clearly. Thursday is named after the god Thor, who is known as strong and a mighty hurler of thunderbolts. Friday was named after the goddess Frigga, who loved the people of the earth and shared in their joys and sorrows. She's supposed to be the goddess responsible for laughter, which we know that's not true. Saturday is named after the god Saturn, who's responsible for bountiful harvest and showed the people of the earth how to grow and reap bountiful crops. This is the things they believe. Yeremia spoke of the mention of these worthless gods in Yeremia 10:8. He said, "But they are altogether senseless. As one, they are consumed by their foolishness, and their stock is a doctrine of vanities, preaching about worthlessness, about worthless gods, Elohim, made of wood." Turn to Galatians 4, verse 9. Galatians 4 and verse 9. "But now knowing Yahweh, or rather having been known by Yahweh, why do you return to the powerless gods and bow down to sacred poles? Why do you want to be in bondage to them all over again? From this you watch for the feast days in deviation from Yahweh's new moon feasts and sacred year." Time after time, king after king, in the book of Kings and the Chronicles, we see one king after another tearing down the demonic astropoles and returning to Yahweh's calendar. For example, turn to 2 Chronicles 34:3. 2 Chronicles 34:3. "From the eighth year of his reign, while he was yet a youth, he began to seek the father of his father David. Then in the 12th year, he began to purge Yada and Jerusalem of the houses with the high places and of the Asherah poles carved and molded of the gods. And he broke down the altars of Balaam, lords, gods, Elohim, and goddesses in his presence, and cut to pieces the incense altars that were above them, and the Asherah poles, and carved molded images of gods. He broke to pieces, pulverized them to dust, and scattered them to the graves who had sacrificed them. Notice, now all these gods that we've been talking about that have been named for the days of the weeks and months are worthless. Ilium mocked the god worshippers that were following after these worthless gods in 1 Kings 18. And they were calling on their gods in this time all around here, and Ilya told them to cry louder, since he's God, he must be mediating, busy, or traveling. That it may be that he's sleeping or must be awakened. Now, these gods that the world has planted in our minds are worthless. I encourage each and every one of you to continue trying to get the names of gods out of your mouth by Passover. Now, not only were the names of gods planted firmly in the minds of people, but the lustful, evil character of the gods and their lustful actions is also inside the minds of everyone on the face of the earth. The Apostle Shaul mentions how we are to put off the character of the old man and follow Yahweh in true holiness. For your notes, Ephesians 4, 22 through 24, and Ephesians 5, verse 8. And with that, I'll turn it over to the next speaker, Stefania Hawkins.
All right, Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Okay. You may be seated. Okay, the title of my sermon is titled, Let Us Not Covet. Now, to be covetous is a very grave sin. Not to say that the breaking of any of Yahweh's commands are not serious, but to be covetous, it deals with the thoughts and the intentions of the heart from which stems a world of iniquities. I'd like for everyone to be turning over to the book of Yeremia, chapter 17, verses 9 and 10. That's the book of Yeremia, chapter 17, verses 9 and 10. Because Yahweh wants to show us something here. And in verse 9 it reads, "The heart is deceitful above all, and it is desperately wicked. Who can know it?" And if you look at the side note over here, it says, side note G3, it says, "Because the wicked always have some excuse to defend their doings and show that their own wicked imaginations deceive them." What I want you to notice here in verse 9, there are two things that are shown here. It is deceitful above all, and it is desperately wicked. In fact, we can be so deceived by this practice that we don't even know that we are sinning. But Yahweh asks us a question here at the end of verse 9. Who can know it? Who can know the heart? And he gives us the answer in verse 10. And it's, "I, Yahweh, searches the heart." And brother, we should be ever so thankful that Yahweh has sent us one who can reveal what's in our hearts and our minds and in our body. Because no one else can see what's in our minds or look inside of this book except him. And that's our great teacher and overseer, Yisro Abel Hawkins. And he's also called the witness. And he's witnessing those who are not heeding the message to repent of this damnable God worship. Now, there are many dynamics that leads to covenant, which could be via our feelings, our thoughts, or the things we hear. But here, we're going to focus on the things that we see. I'd like to show you two words here. And this would be the focal point. Okay, the first word there is glance. And it says to take a quick look at to catch a glimpse of and to move swiftly from one thing to another. And then the second word here is gaze, to look steadily or intently, as with great curiosity, interest, pleasure, or wonder. So what takes place with the glance is an image is formed in our minds. And at this point, we start to gaze at it. And once we start to gaze at it, we know that this is a forceful system. So these things are constantly being pushed through our eyes by me, just by simply walking or driving down the road. Now, with the you know, this is the force of it, so there's really not much we can do or change about it at this point. But with certain glances, we can, because a glance is something that we pay attention to or something that gets the attention. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 1, it talks about, I'll just quote it, it talks about the serpent being more subtle and crafty than any beast of the field. In fact, so subtle and crafty that there's only one way to be prepared of, and that's to set our minds in advance and to be aware of our surroundings and our environment, because certain movements and noises are designed to get us to take a quick look. These advertisements and pop-ups that are placed in the net are designed to get us to take a quick look. And Yahweh allows these things. And in Genesis chapter 2, verse 9, he shows us this. And he allows these things because he wants to see if mankind will seek after the desired thing lawfully, or would he commit a crime to obtain them. And we know that the crime is the breaking of his laws. there's the breaking of his law. So he said, do not covet. And he gives us, he said he'd give us the desired thing, but we must wait on him. And Matthias 6, Matthias chapter 6, verses 33 mentions that Yahweh, seek the kingdom first, and he'll give us the desired thing. So that means he has a way to go about it. And so he says, do not covet. But these things that we see and then want are placed there to create wantiness, wants, not needs. And these things that we see and then want, our desires are geared toward that. And we think that these things will bring us a peace of mind or some type of satisfaction or joy. But the reality of it is leading us in the opposite direction. And we are warned we're not to go that route. So when we have to be desperate, taking unnecessary risks to go after this stuff by means of this system, after all the things we have been taught, and it's just stuff. And here a while back, I was looking for something, and I noticed that I was going through a whole lot of stuff. And I was kind of getting kind of frustrated. And at a point, a time, we thought this was something that we wanted. Come to find out later, it was worthless. And if you look in a catalog, it's full of this worthless stuff. And that's how we become full of it, when we want to seek our own way or follow our own feelings or don't want to obey authority. This is the sickness that Yahshua said he will free us from. You know, real quick, let's turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 6. Chapter 6, verse 7. That's 1 Timothy chapter 6. Verse 7. It says, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain that we can carry nothing out. You know, in the world, they got a vehicle. It's called a hearse, and it's used to transport bodies in to the graveyard. And brethren, believe you me, I have never, ever seen a U-Haul riding in the back of a hearse. Never. And, but remember, brothers, Pastor said before of the feast to get the leavening out. And Yahweh, and that's what we should do. And Yahweh means business, and that's what we should be about. And he knows those who are, because he knows those who are. Because he says if he's called us, his spirit is dwelling with us. No matter if we're in behind closed doors, or in some other kind of secret place, bury yourself in a hole. He said, I'll still find you. How is this? Because he knows our heart. So, brother, let's get this leveling out. Let's get all the God worship out. Get the names out of our mouths. And let's get prepared to bring in Yahweh's great feast. And with that, I'll turn it over to the great deacon, Yahshua the Warrior.
Shabbat shalom, great saints of Yahweh. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. You may be seated. So my title today is, how do we know the book of Yahweh is for us in these last days? Again, that's how do we know the book of Yahweh is for us in these last days? Pastor is constantly, constantly encouraging us to bring our notebooks, paper, pencils, book of Yahweh to services, take notes, follow along, and to go home and back to our dwellings and study the sermons and practice giving those sermons to our family, our brothers, our sisters, so that we could be prepared and actually put into practice these things. This is also a way that we can keep and do what it says in 2 Timothy 2:15, to study to show ourselves approved. Pastor teaches by building a foundation. He uses history, prophecy, and scriptures, and puts it all into a form that we can follow. Well, some of us will say he okifies it for us. So we are told to read and study the book of Yahweh. Isaiah, if you turn to Isaiah 34:16, it's on page 550 in your books of Yahweh. It's Isaiah 34:16. This is a very familiar scripture. It says here, search out the book of Yahweh and read. Not one of these will be neglected, for it is written, Yahweh is their shepherd, they shall not want, for his mouth has commanded it, and his spirit has gathered them. So now, couldn't do this until the book of Yahweh was actually available, which it was published in 1987. So you couldn't really search out the book of Yahweh until 1987. So doing this made it very difficult. In fact, I'm going to show this right here. This is the June 2014 prophetic word. Can you back that up one more time? That's fine. This prophetic word magazine actually went into great detail. Most of this magazine is about the bringing back of the book of Yahweh. And I would tell you that it was the first time the book of Yahweh was assembled all in one place. Also, so it's 1987. You couldn't even find a book of Yahweh until 1987. So then, he turns with me to Deuteronomy 12:5. That's on page 157. These are all very familiar scriptures. This is all very... All the information I'm bringing out today is all information that we know and we should be familiar with, but there's a point. So in Deuteronomy 12:5, it reads, "But you are to seek the habitation of your father, the house of Yahweh, the place which Yahweh your father shall choose out of all your tribes to establish his name, and there you must go." So, when was it we could go to the house of Yahweh? I'm going to be reading out of the house of Yahweh established. We're going to be on page 27, and we're going to be on this highlighted spot. And so the charter from the state of Texas was granted on Seventh Roman month, 21st day of 1981. So that was when the house of Yahweh was charter in Texas. The state of Texas was acknowledged and accepted. Then the Internal Revenue Service of the United States, the chief nation of all nations, officially recognized the establishment of the house of Yahweh on Second Roman month, fourth day of 1983. So there you have the house of Yahweh is recognized and established between 1981 and 1983. So you couldn't even go to the place, the habitation, the house of our Father until that day. So to think that these things were offered or available any other time before this is really hard to put into play. So Daniel, everybody will turn over Daniel 12:4 with me. This is another extremely familiar scripture. Daniel 12:4 is where Daniel, I'm just going to read it. It says, "But you, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book to the time of the end. many will run to and fro, and knowledge will be increased. Now we know that Daniel wanted to know these things, but it wasn't for him. And it said, seal up the book, seal up the prophecy, seal up all these words. So no one's going to really understand what's going on. Then you come to 1934 when our great pastor and overseer Israel Abel Hawkins was born. That started the last days. And also, pastor is the one that was the one sent, the chosen one. The one that's been opening these seals, it's unsealed these things for us. And for some examples of these seals that have been opened, if you look at the writings that pastor has done, you can, in Isaiah 34:16, it says, search out the book of Yahweh and read, which also we've been told means study. And we study the prophetic word and all these other publications. But the understanding comes when we get the information of the unsealing of these words, like the Mark of the Beast, Volume 1, which pastor wrote in the 70s but was published in 1985, the Mark of the Beast, Volume 2, Deceptions Concerning Yahweh's Calendar of Events, the Lost Faith of the Apostles and Prophets, Devil Worship, the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program, and the list goes on and on. If you're just coming into the house of Yahweh now, or this is all new to you, you probably don't even have enough time to read and catch up on all these things. But these are the tools we've been given. This is the seals being opened for us. This is how we study to show ourselves approved. We read the book of Yahweh. We use these tools. We take notes during services. So by studying the writings and taking notes, attending the classes, we are learning what to teach. We are actually doing what we've been told and instructed. We're becoming servants. We're becoming servants because that's the greatest teacher. Teachers, the ones that get up and speak, we're the servants. So with all this in mind, we need to get the God worship out. Like Deacon Bill said earlier, like the changing of the calendar, separating ourselves from the world, eliminating things that the world is taking in as for themselves, like sports, music, video games, music. In other words, don't learn the way they worship their gods. Remember, we are learning to be teachers, and as pastor has told us, that is the greatest servant. This is just one example of why it is so important to be keeping up with and redeeming the time. So keep striving for the goal. Learn what to teach so we can teach what we've learned. And may Yahweh bless your understanding. I'll be turning it over to the great Deacon Noah.
May all be seated. Shabbat shalom, everyone. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. It's an honor to address the called out ones of the house of Yahweh. And the title of my presentation today is The Hope of a Better World Lies in the Education of People in the Right Principles. And so, you know, it's clear to see that there's so many problems in the world that need to be solved, whether it's on a societal scale or just in individual lives. And everyone recognizes that there's many problems that do need solutions, but they don't have the solutions available to them because they've been given the wrong information. Who here has ever heard the saying, knowledge is power? You know, that's very common. So if you're given the wrong knowledge, the wrong education, and the wrong information, you're going to have the power to make wrong choices that will bring forth negative results in your life or destruction. Now, if you're given the right education and the right principles, you'll actually have the power to make right choices. So that's why education is so very important. And the lack of peaceful conditions in the world today and the lack of abundance and health in society is due to having that wrong education and the wrong principles. Now, let's clarify what a principle is. A principle is a fundamental truth or a proposition that serves as a foundation for a system of belief. So the right principles mean that you have to have a foundation for a system of belief that's morally correct. And that's very important. And so in the beginning, Yahweh actually gave mankind a perfect set of principles. He gave us an instruction manual, actually, in the laws, in the Holy Scriptures, the statutes, and the judgments that he gave mankind in the very beginning that would actually govern life perfectly, that would bring forth peace in mankind's life, and the world would live without war and conflict. And if you have any doubt if this is a perfect instruction manual that Yahweh gave us, you can turn over to Psalms chapter 19. It's found on page 441. Psalms chapter 19 and verse 7. It says, the laws of Yahweh are perfect, converting the whole person. The testimony of Yahweh is sure, making the simple ones wise. And the statutes of Yahweh are right, rejoicing the heart and mind. And the commandments of Yahweh are pure, bringing understanding to the eyes. The reverence of Yahweh is clean and enduring forever, and the judgments of Yahweh are true and altogether righteous. They are more to be desired than gold, yes, even fine gold, and they are sweeter than honey in the honeycomb. And look at verse 11. Moreover, by them your servants are warned, and in keeping them is a great reward. And so this instruction manual, you know, how many of you have ever bought a product and came with an instruction manual in the box? You open the box up to try to assemble it, and you threw the instruction manual out with all of the packaging, right? Then you were putting it together for a while, and a little while later you started to realize this thing isn't quite going together right. There's a few problems. Maybe I got a few screws missing, or it's not. Maybe you actually got it together, but it doesn't actually work quite the way you expected it to or the way it's supposed to. Well, that's exactly what mankind did with the instruction manual Yahweh gave him. He threw it away in the beginning. That was from the creator, our manufacturer, if you will, of humanity, of the planet we live on, the entire universe we're in. And mankind threw that out because he thought he was smart enough to figure it out on his own. He didn't need the guidance of his creator. And, you know, that's what got mankind into so much trouble from the very beginning, because they accepted the deception of Satan, the wrong information, and that gave him the power to make the wrong choices. So also, though, in the beginning, Yahweh gave a pattern of a righteous teacher. He gave Abel, is the first righteous teacher, and to this day, we actually are blessed to have the last Abel with us, teaching and guiding us. Yes, praise Yahweh. But you know, mankind really rejected a lot of that teaching. He put up a lot of fight against those teachers throughout history, from the very beginning to this very day. It's resisted, rejected, it's willfully ignored, in fact, and persecuted. And they even hung the Savior on the stake, and then after that they burnt the rest of those who were trying to continue that. They burnt them at the stake as well, and then tried to burn the Holy Scriptures. But Yahweh actually protected that for us, and we're blessed to have it here with us today, the Holy Scriptures, to have this instruction manual with us to live in peace. Now, the one sent in this time period actually also gave us some handbooks as a companion to Yahweh's instruction manual to help us apply that in a guide to practicing it in our lives. And so we're blessed to have the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program to utilize that so that we can avoid these curses and we can actually educate others to help them see, to have the right knowledge and give them the power to make right choices. Now, to see how confused the world has gotten, you know, this is sourced from independent.co.uk. Out of 195 countries on Earth right now, there's actually only 185 of them that are considered conflict-free. And of course, in those 10 countries that they consider as conflict-free, we know that there's a lack of morality in those countries, and they have wars going on and conflict in their own lives. But you know, there's also, they count 56 million deaths annually worldwide. They say there's 56 million deaths from heart disease and cancer, etc. This is really sad, though, that there's actually 56 million, it's kind of ironic, it's the same, almost the same exact number, abortions annually worldwide. The same number of deaths from all of the leading causes of death, there's actually 56 million babies being killed every year. And we could go on about the evil, confused mess that mankind has gotten themselves into. It's very corrupt. But the important lesson to realize is that all of this is caused by rejection of the right principles given by Yahweh's instruction manual for his creation. They rejected that. They accepted Satan's wrong information, and they started making the wrong choices to follow his own way because they thought they could figure it out on their own. They were smart enough. They didn't need their creator's guidance. So if you turn over to Hosea chapter 10, this isn't a scripture that we go to too often, but it's very fitting to this. Hosea chapter 10, and we'll look at verse 13. You have plowed wickedness and you've reaped iniquity. You've eaten the fruit of lies because you've trusted in your own way and in the multitude of mighty men. You know, they've trusted in their own strength of their armies and peace through force. But you know, the great thing is that that we have a teacher and that Yahweh actually kept the scriptures protected to this day. And now we're the only organization on earth that's actually striving to not only teach the right principles from the Holy Scriptures, but also to live by them and practice them in our lives. And we're actively teaching it, we're promoting it, and we're practicing those principles to the best of our ability. And there's a quick quote here from the second book of Yisrael. It's amazing how much of the peaceful solution you can find way back in the early 1990s when Pastor was giving those sermons. But he says in chapter, going on to perfection, series number 2, verse 62, that mankind actually has the ability to have his character built, and a man who is determined to follow Yahweh's laws can actually change his nature and the way that he determines to walk and live. So mankind has the power to choose, and that's what's very unique about humanity and Yahweh's creation, is that we have the ability to think and to choose the right way and the right choices. So in closing, you know, be a goal setter. It'll give you direction and purpose. It'll give you motivation and keep you moving forward on the right track and in the right direction. It's one of the most important elements to success, at perseverance and staying on track, remaining determined and committed, even when things aren't going so well and you run into troubles and failures and difficulties. And Yahshua's memorial and the Feast of Passover is coming up very soon. It's fast approaching. So remember Yahshua's example of service to us and to others. And we have an unparalleled opportunity right now and in the near future as well. But we have a great opportunity before us right now today as well. So we are very blessed to have the Teacher of Righteousness. And we when people are given education in the right principles, you have the right knowledge, and you actually have the power to make right choices. So keep learning and never stop learning. That's our hope for a better world when all people can actually live in peace and health and abundance, due first to education, then to practice in those principles. With that, I'll turn it over to the next speaker, Caleb.
Shabbat shalom. You may all be seated. It's a privilege and honor to speak to the great saints of Yahweh. Today, my title is It's Your Choice. And the speaker before me, his closing was great. That flows right in with my speech title today. Because my purpose is to show that we have an opportunity to choose who we are going to serve. You know, Pastor said there's two trees. There's righteousness and there's evil. And there's Yahweh's way or the God's way. And which way are we going to, which way are we choosing? It's your choice. It's your choice from, you know, one of the queens of the house of Yahweh last week. She gave a great point. She said when she was 15, she thought she knew it all, right? Because everybody went through that stage. I know I did. And I got trained pretty quickly that I didn't know it all. But it's very important to understand that we choose. If you're a teenager or somebody, you can make your own decision. It is your choice. It is nobody else's choice whether I leave, I stay, I go. It is your choice. And it really came up to a sum because growing up in the house of Yahweh, I grew up with many. Very few were left. Very, very few. And it was sad. But a great Kahan mentioned on Thursday night in the Muja class, and I got on this topic, you know, I was thinking, choices and choose. Very two words I always thought about whenever they came up and said, hey, are you able to get a speech together? I was like, sure, I can get one together. And I really focused on those because it's our choice to choose which way are we going to go. Do we want to go with the gods or are we going to go with Yahweh? And being raised and born in the house of Yahweh, I chose that. I chose to stay here and stick it out, and I'm going to show you why I've chosen it. If we go over to Psalms 145. Let's see, it's on page 493. Psalms 145, verse 8. And we got to realize right here, it says, Yahweh is merciful and full of compassion. He is slow to anger and abounding in loving and kindness. How many of us have slipped up, but through counseling and confessions, we just get up and we keep going? Yahweh is always loving and he's kind. And he gives us that opportunity, whether we leave, whether we come back, you always get the opportunity to improve yourself, and that's what Yahweh offers you. Now, let's turn over to Yahshua 24, because this is where the speech sort of came to a head whenever I thought of it, because growing up, we always heard in classes, in early morning Sabbath classes, you know, they always go, it's your choice. It's on page 198. They said, it's your choice. And if we look at Yahshua 24, verse 15, it says, but if it seems evil to you to serve Yahweh, then choose for yourself this day. Whom will you serve? You know, if it seems evil to serve Yahweh, then choose. You know, it's your choice. Choose. Where are you going to go? You know, Yahshua says, and I think it's in Matthew 18, you know, be humble. Be humble like that little child. If we can't be humble, then we need to choose. Who will we serve? Will we serve Yahweh or will we serve the gods? And I really took that choosing because in my line of work, I do a lot of hospital. And on one part of a certain hospital, they shut down that section. They moved it to another. And it was sort of like a vacant area. And I was walking with the supervisor I was dealing with to go to a job. And we were waiting on the elevator. And it just went to show what the world has to offer. And as we wait, the elevator opened, and here come three dead bodies on gurneys rolling out. And once you see it, see how to put it. It's hard to put into words what you see, because Greg Kahn mentioned, I know I said it, but I didn't actually say what he mentioned in the Muja class last week. He said, Yahweh's way is eternal life. Eternal life, that's what he offers you. Keep the 613 laws. You come to confessions, go to classes, get involved in the work. Don't get involved in worldly activities because they're not going to help you. You get killed quicker than anything. If you do all these things, you'll get eternal life. What does the world give? We're going to show in Deuteronomy. Because we spoke what the world's going to give you. And Yahweh even shows it to you. Deuteronomy 30, and let's go at verse 15. And it says, see, I've set before you this day life by righteousness and death by destruction. And that I command you this day to love Yahweh your Father by walking in all his ways, by keeping his laws, his statutes, and his judgments, so that you may live and multiply. So Yahweh your Father may bless you in the land which you go to possess. But if your heart turns away and you are not obedient, and you were drawn away submit to the gods to worship by serving them, I declare to you that day you will surely perish. You will not prolong your days in the land you cross over in the Jordan to possess. I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses, because you are free agents to choose your own choice between righteousness and evil. It says it right there. You are able to choose what you want to do. All right? What are you going to choose? You know, we need to think about that. Because you don't want to bring anybody else down in the house of Yahweh to go out, you know, to take out with you. And let's go to verse 20. It says, so you may love Yahweh your Father by listening to him, obeying him. Hold fast to him, for he is your life. He will also give you many years in the land he vowed to give you, your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And remember that word vow. That word vow is very important because, remember, Yahweh cannot lie. And I got scriptures for you to prove that. If you can write them down for sake of time. It is Hebrews 6, 13 and 18. Also, Psalms 89, verses 34 and 35. Numbers 23 and verse 19. Those are all scriptures that show there's no possible way for Yahweh to lie. There's no way. There's no way possible. And so, in closing, I would like to encourage everybody to remember, choose this day who you will serve, as Deuteronomy says. And with that, if you all please stand. I'd like to turn it over to the great Deacon Daniel Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. Please be seated. It's a privilege and honor to come before the saints of Yahweh today. May Yahweh bless your understanding. If everyone, please open up in your book of Yahweh and turn to Deuteronomy 30. And we're going to be looking at verse 19 today. My title today is Let Us Allow the Strength of the Holy Men and Women of Old to Inspire Us to Obtain the Promises and Rewards that Yahweh has to offer. My purpose today is to bring forth a message of hope. We can endure, we can stay in Yahweh's house, and we can do this work that Yahweh has for us in these last days. So in Deuteronomy 30, verse 19, it reads, I call heaven and earth as witness against you this day, that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Therefore, because you are free agents to make your own choice between righteousness and evil, therefore choose life, so both you and your children may live. So brothers and sisters, no matter how difficult the tests and trials get, because they do get that difficult and they're getting more difficult as time continues, we have the choice to choose between life or God worship, the keeping of Yahweh's laws or the breaking of Yahweh's laws. And yes, even though we go through tests and trials, this is still Yahweh's great house, and that fact will never change. So let's look at our tests and trials. Whenever I think about that term, test and trials, I think about the scripture, Hebrews 11. Basically, the whole chapter talks about men and women of old who went through tests and trials. So let's look at verse 36 to 37 and verse 40. This is found on page 951. It reads, and others had trials of cruel mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned and sawed in two. Now, I remember one time I was at the school, and we were talking about this scripture right here. And I was just thinking about it, you know, talking to the boys about how, you know, you have an individual here that just tries to keep Yahweh's laws, and he's being persecuted for it. And he's been put into a hollow log, and as the saw slowly goes back and forth, cutting him and then cutting his bone and his flesh, this is what this man went through to keep Yahweh's laws in his day. And various others went through even more, like the great deacon Stephen, how he was stoned for keeping Yahweh's laws. But think about it right here in verse 40. Yahweh having provided some better thing for us, they without us will not be made perfect. And for your notes, Matithia 20 verse 16 shows that the last will be first. So even though these people were great, we're going to be better than them. So how much more should we strive to keep Yahweh's laws in this last days when we don't have to get stoned or sawed in two or some of the various things the men and women of old had to suffer? So let's go over to Matithia 22 verse 13, because we're going to look at some of the things that we will receive if we don't keep Yahweh's laws and endure until the end. Then the king, Yeshua, is reading a parable. You know, this is in page 750. And he shows a parable to his disciples. And it shows in here in Matithia 22, verse 13. It shows, then the king said to the servants, bind him hand and foot, take him away, and cast him into outer darkness, for there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, I searched up that word gnashing in Strong's Greek. It's word number 1030, bergmos. And it means grinding or gnashing. A gnashing of teeth denoting the extreme anguish and utter despair of men consigned to eternal condemnation. So this is the gnashing you will get when you realize everything that you could have had, but you rejected it for whatever reason. Now, I want to show a prop here. Okay, so as you can see, there's an individual, these two individuals are striving to get a goal. And obviously our goal in the house of Yahweh is much greater than diamonds and anything that this world can offer. But the person that's far away from the goal, this is like when we first come to the house of Yahweh. We're very zealous to achieve that goal. However, you know, he's so zealous and he's trying to get there, but however, that individual who's right there, and this is exactly how we are right now. Right there, he turns away and gives up. You know, we shouldn't turn away and give up. as it says in Romans 13, verse 11. This is on page 883. And do this, understanding the present time. The hour has come for you to wake up from your slumber, because our redemption, our salvation is near. Nearer now than when we first believed. So it's nearer now than when we first believed. When we were first zealous, you know, it was farther. But now, right now, it's not time to give up. It's never time to give up keeping Yahweh's laws. So let's look at some of the blessings that we will receive if we stay in Yahweh's house forever. For your notes, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, shows that Yahweh won't give us anything greater than we can bear. And 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9, shows us that eye has not seen, nor ear has heard, neither has it entered into the mind of man what Yahweh has in store for those who love him. So, you know, we can never imagine what we're giving up. You're giving up something. You don't even know how great it is if you leave Yahweh's house. So how are we going to achieve this goal? Keep Yahweh's laws. Put away all God worship. Make sure you pay your tithes and offerings. Serve in Yahweh's house. Make sure you come to confessions. Go to your counselors. Get sin out of your life. And remember Psalms 119, verse 165. Great peace have they who love your law, and nothing shall offend them, cause them to fall away because of sin, unbelief or sin. That should be our mindset. Nothing should cause us to fall away or grow weak because our redemption draws near. So with that, I'll ask everyone to please stand. I'd like to turn it over to the great Deacon Gamil Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. You may be seated. I would like for everyone to write down this title. My title is, What or Who Will You Allow to Separate Oneself from the Love of the Messiah? What or who? In Romans 8:35, it reads, Who will separate us from the love of the Messiah? Will tribulation, distress, persecution, famine, danger, or sword? Now, all these are examples of things that are what, not necessarily who. But it could be a who as well. So what will we value more than the love of the Messiah and allow it to quench our love that we have for the house of Yahweh and the teachings? Will it be entertainment? The love of money? Our worldly family? The worldly calendar? What will we value more than what the house of Yahweh is bringing forth in these last days? In Yochanan 14:15, we find out that Yahshua said the keeping of his teachings was love. If you love me, keep my commandments. And we now know that Yahshua was in total agreement with Yahweh. They were both in unity. 1 Yochanan 5:3, for this is love of Yahweh, that we keep his laws. So Yahshua and Yahweh were in total unity. Their love was the same. The teaching, the preaching, the total obedience of Yahweh's laws. So think deeply on this. What will you, what will I, what will we allow? What will we allow to separate ourselves from the love that the house of Yahweh is bringing out? What will we value more? We need to think about this each and every day as we're going throughout our day. And we value things. What are we putting first? I pray nothing, brothers. I pray nothing will separate us from this great house, the great love of Yahweh, the great love that Pastor has for us, the time that he puts in, and our great High Priest Yahshua, who is guiding him and directing him. We have to be in total unity. Whatever the house of Yahweh is bringing forth, we have to agree with, stand with, and be in unity with. Remember, obedience comes first, right? And then the understanding comes. We have to be in agreement, not just with our words, right? The scriptures say that they worshipped with words, but their hearts were far from them. Let's turn over to 1 Yochanan 3:18. Love not in words, but in deeds. Works, right? Our deeds, the works that we do, the positions that we've been granted, and truth, the laws. Psalms 119, 142. Yahweh's law is the truth. So we see right here that we are to love the love of Yeshua, the love of Yahweh, the love of pasture, is our works that we put forth and the laws that we are being taught to keep. In 1 Yochanan 2:15, we are taught, do not love the world, nor the things that are in the world. So once again I ask, what will you allow to separate you from this house, from the calling that Yahweh has given to you? 1 Yochanan 2:15, do not love the world, nor the things that are in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him or her. In 1 Yochanan 3:10, we're told, by this, in this, the children of Yahweh and the children of the devil are manifest. Whoever does not practice righteousness. So there we go, our works right there. What are we practicing? What are we allowing to fill our minds? Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of Yahweh and does not love his neighbor. You see that? Practice. Practice righteousness. Now, pastor in the house of Yahweh brought forth Yahweh's calendar, right? The sacred calendar. It is the righteousness of Yahweh. This calendar is bringing forth Yahweh's righteousness. And we need to stand in agreement with the house of Yahweh. Yes, it is difficult. I have a lot of young men who question me, what day of the calendar is it? And I've got to admit, they get me because I work in the world. So I have two calendars. And it is difficult trying to balance between the two. But Yahweh says we are to practice righteousness. So we have to practice using the calendar, the material the house of Yahweh has brought forth. And we need to stand in agreement with the house of Yahweh and practice removing the names of the gods from our vocabulary. This is nothing new. I remember the house of Yahweh put out a pamphlet, and they had the names of gods. And when I first came, we strove to get these names out of our vocabulary. This is just another step in the house of Yahweh purifying our vocabulary and bringing forth the righteousness of Yahweh. This is the next chapter in our book. Of our life, right? This is your life. What are you allowing to separate you from the love of the Messiah? Or what are you using to solidify your position in the kingdom? In Romans 6:16, do you not know that to whom you yield yourself as servants to obey, his servants you are whom you obey? Let us obey Yahweh, who has instructed us not to mention the names of these gods. Let's work together to allow nothing to separate us from the love of our Father Yahweh and Yeshua and the love that pasture has for us. Let us strive not to learn the names of the gods. Let us strive to learn the names of the months that have been provided for us in the house of Yahweh calendar. So that it can become a part of our life. Allow these things to solidify our position in the house of Yahweh. That's all I have for today. May Yahweh bless your understanding and your efforts in getting God worship out. At this time, I would like to turn it over to the great deacon, Amanya.
Shalom, brothers and sisters. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. I really need to have your full attention, okay? If you don't mind. The title of my sermon today is going to be, We Must Be Willing. And what do I mean by that? I bet you there's a lot of things that come up to your mind and everything like that about being willing. We come here to be taught, right? We come here to be trained. We come here to be trained in the character that we must have in order for us to have the knowledge that we need to run the universe. This is very important, okay? Let's take a look at this word willing real quick, okay? It means It means to be ready, eager, or prepared to do something, also given or due readily, willing and prompt obedience. Turn over to Isaiah chapter 1 in your books of Yahweh. Isaiah chapter 1, verse 16. We're going to look at 16, 17, 19, and 20, okay? It reads, "Wash yourself and make yourself clean. Put away the evil of your doings before my eyes. Cease to do evil." Cease to do evil. Evil like the gods. We got to get God worship out of our lives. Completely out of our lives. Learn to do righteousness. Where do we do that at? Where do we learn that at? That's exactly right. From who? That's right. Israel Hawkins. Nobody else. Nobody else on the face of this planet is teaching righteousness. There's nobody on the face of this earth that's keeping the laws the way that we are keeping the laws through the teachings of Pastor Israel Hawkins and the priest. That's right. That's exactly right. Look at verse 19 here, okay? "If you will be willing and obedient, you will eat the fruit of the land." Notice that right there. If you will be obedient and willing, willing to get the God worship out of your life, willing to go through whatever you need to go through to get the God worship out of your life. It's very important. It's very important. And then you will eat the fruit of the land. Look at verse 20. Let's notice this for a minute here. I'm going to show you. Verse 20. "If you refuse and rebel, you will be devoured by the sword, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it." Refuse and rebel. That means that you refuse. "No, I'm not going to do that. Nope. You're not going to tell me that. You're not going to tell me what to do. I want to live the way that I want to live. You will be devoured." That's what Yahweh says. We must stop refusing and rebelling and learn to yield ourselves to the teachings and keep our hearts on pastor without rebelling and disputing and doubt. Turn over to Philippians chapter 2, verse 14 real quick. Let's notice something here. "Do all things without murmuring and disputing." In other words, just say, "Okay, I'll do it. What do you want me to do?" Praise Yahweh. What do you want me to do? What is it that you need me to do? In order that you will be, notice that right there, blameless and harmless. See, you notice what we are when we do this right here? Blameless and harmless. Okay? The children of Yahweh, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. Okay? This is very important that we understand that right there, okay? Let's look at an example here real quick of being humble and being willing. Turn over to Matthew chapter 14, verse 26 and 31. I'm going to speed up here a little bit. It says, let's skip down to, let's go to verse 27 really quick here. It says, "But immediately Yahshua spoke to them, saying, Be of great courage, it is I. Do not be afraid. Then Kepha answered and said to him, Teacher, if it is you, tell me to come out to the water on you. Tell me to come to you on the water. Yahshua said, Come. Then Kepha came down out of the ship and began to walk on the water." Notice verse 30 here. This is an example of what we're supposed to do, okay? It says, "But when he perceived the strong winds blowing around him, he was afraid and began to sink." This is exactly what we do when we get our minds off of pastor in this house. We sink. We're going down, okay? And this is something that we don't need to be doing right here, okay? And then look at right here. He says, he cried out, "Teacher, save me." That's what we need to do. We need to cry out for help, okay? We need to cry out for help when we see ourselves seeking, when we're complaining, murmuring, and everything like that, okay? You understand? Gotta have you understand that. Now let's go to Proverbs 3:6, okay? 3:6. It says, in all your ways acknowledge Yahweh, and he will direct your paths. How? By willingly and completely submitting to pastor in the house of Yahweh in all decisions, not agreeing with and submitting to the decisions of pastor and the house of Yahweh is God worship. So the next time you want to complain or murmur, right, about a decision that is made, remember, you're God worshiping. Okay? Keep that in mind. And with that, if you all please stand, I'd like to turn it over to the great Kananya Hawkins.
You may be seated. Shabbat Shalom, Saints of Yahweh. Everybody looking forward to the upcoming feast? Praise Yahweh. A time where this is our vacation time, so to speak, except we don't have a vacant spot in our life. We have more work that we do. We enjoy it. We have our brothers and our sisters that we get with three times a year, and we rejoice before Yahweh at the feet of Yahweh's priest. All right. I normally don't give the title to my sermon before I start, but I want to do that today because I want you to keep a mindset or focus on the direction that I'm wanting to go with this today. And it's entitled, As Members of the Body of Messiah, Love One Another. Okay? As members of the body of Messiah, love one another. And it's important for us to keep that in mind because I think we sometimes might forget who we represent, who we are, what Yahweh's called us to in his house. We are not just members of a church, you know. We are not just people of a religious organization. We're actually training to become a part of a body that's going to rule or govern, I should say. We're going to serve all of Yahweh's creation in unity, of course, with Yahweh and his laws and with one another. And we're going to display that beauty through consistently training in the laws of Yahweh, having concern and care for one another. Even the ones that Yahweh says, Yahweh says, love your neighbor, whether a friend or an enemy. So even those right now who hate us, we're going to display that love and concern towards them by the training we're going through now as a part of that. And of course, what we're going to have authority over is going to teach those men and those women to love Yahweh just like we're loving him right now. So the first thing I want you to think about is, where is the body of Messiah? How does Yahweh define a body? Let's look over to 1 Corinthians in chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. And we're going to look at verses 13 through 15. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 13 through 15. And it says, food is for the stomach, and the stomach is for food, but Yahweh will destroy both it and them. Now the body, as you can read that for yourself in verse 14, and Yahweh has both raised up Yahshua and will raise up him and raise us up by his own power. Keep those two things in mind. Two things we're seeing there in verse 14. And Yahweh has raised both, and Yahweh has, excuse me, both raised up Yahshua, past tense, he already has done that. He's raised up Yahshua, he did it through the prophecy to begin with, and showing that he was going to bring forth the man from the Son of Man, who would be this perfect lamb that was shown all the way back before the children of Israel even went into Egypt, with Abraham taking his son Isaac, and Yahweh providing, giving that example of Yahweh providing the lamb, providing the sacrifice. And then it was reiterated to Moshe in Exodus 25 when Yahweh told Moshe to see that you make everything according to the pattern that is shown to you on the mountain or at the house of Yahweh. And of course, Yahshua was raised, he was born, he was bred, raised, and lived his life, did the work that he did, died, and he was raised up and now sits at the right hand of Yahweh, training to be
over this great kingdom. He has, like Pastor says, 2,000 years of training where we're going to clean up the mess that mankind has taken 6,000 years to break down and destroyed. We're going to clean it. We're going to have, in about 1,000 years' time, we're going to get this place back to a Garden of Eden state. And he says he did that with Yahshua and will also raise us up by his own power. Now, verse 15, it says, "Do you not know that your bodies are the members of Messiah?" In verse 17, it says, "But the person who is united to Yahweh is one with him in spirit." And of course, we should be striving for that unity with Yahweh, with one another, of course, with our pastor and overseer who is leading and guiding us. He is the one who is in Yahshua's stead, teaching us and bringing us into Yahweh's image and likeness, so that we can be this perfectly united body of Yahweh. Of course, Yochanan 6:63 tells us what that spirit is. Look up real quick to verse 19 and 20 of 1 Corinthians 6. "Or do you not know that your body is the sanctuary of Holy Spirit, or Spirit Holy, which you have from Yahweh, and you are not your own?" No, none of us are our own. We were bought with the price. Yeshua gave his life. You know, when we sin, the first time we sin, we were worthy of death. Now, we can't give our lives and then for our penalty of our sin and then raise ourselves back up. Yahshua, you know, paid that price, giving his life, suffering the death penalty on our behalf. And not just us sitting here in this room right now, those who came before us and those who come after us, he did. "And we are not our own, for you were bought with the price. Therefore, glorify Yahweh in your body and in your spirit, which are Yahweh's." They belong to Yahweh. Okay, and this glorification or this uplifting of the laws of Yahweh, one of the ways we do it is through obedience. Obedience to every word that comes forth from Yahweh's mouth through the council, as the Kohans and the Kohanas give counsel to one another and to the people. Through the love we display for one another. Because when we display love for one another, you know, when we respect one another, when we care for one another, we are glorifying Yahweh in our bodies. Why? Because Yahweh, he was the first example. He was the very first example of showing love towards mankind. You know, I'm trying to think what the... I can't remember the speaker. I should have wrote it down. It's just something that popped up in my mind. But one of the, he wasn't a speaker. He was, I'm not even. But anyway, you know, you kind of can see the character of a person when they do something for someone who can't benefit them, who can't do anything to benefit them or to give them, you know, a reward or a gift or, you know, money. You know, taking care of people, that's the character of Yahweh. Because What do we have that we can give to Yahweh? You know, money. You know, what's Yahweh going to do with money? And you know, our service and our love and our obedience is the best thing we can do to Him, for Him. The word "body" there from Strong's is the Greek word "soma," and it's from 4983, and it means the body of men, animals, a dead body or a corpse, a living body of animals, the body of planets and of stars, that is of heavenly bodies. And it's used of large or small number of men closely united into one society or as a family, as it were, a social ethical body. And the definition here says so in the New Testament of the church, or it would actually be the house of Yahweh. Now, Merriam-Webster's dictionary online shows this word "body" is a group of persons or things, such as they give an example of a fighting unit force, a body or of cavalry. It says a group of individuals organized for some purpose. A group of individuals organized for some purpose. Now, if you remember what the reason was that Yahweh created mankind was. Does anybody remember what the reason Yahweh created mankind was for? Concern for his creation. Concern for the universe. Why? Because Satan, in guiding her sons, who left their first estate, yes, they were presented to Yahweh, "Consider my sons. You know, I would like these men to be put in the office of governing the universe." Well, they had already proven that they weren't capable of doing it because they had trespassed on the earth and Yahweh allowed it to be so. He could have stopped it, but he needed to allow them to go their own way to prove what sin brings, just like he's doing with mankind on the earth right now. So she said, have you considered my sons? Well, Yahweh says, have you considered my servant, Iyob? Because he is living and doing what I have commanded him to do. Now, something else for you to think about is when Yahweh says, have you considered my servant? Put your name in that spot next time you read that scripture. Because we are on trial, just like Iyob, Yashub was on trial at that time. And of course, our purpose is to fulfill what's shown in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. Yahweh showed it at the very beginning why he was creating man to begin with. And of course, at the end of this thing, death and Sheol, the grave, is going to be completely destroyed. Why? Because there's not going to be people practicing sin. We're not going to have curses. We're not going to have sickness and suffering. No one likes to be sick. You know, no one likes to see suffering in their own bodies or in the bodies of another person. And that's what we're preparing for. So in Hebrews chapter 10, because Yahweh is preparing this body for Yahshua Messiah, he's preparing us for him. Yahshua said, in my Father's house there are many mansions, many offices, many, many places, many, many jobs to perform, and I go to prepare it for you. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 5, he says, therefore, when he came into the world, he said, sacrifice and offering you did not want, but a body you have prepared for me. And burnt offerings and sacrifice for sin you had no pleasure. No, those things did not take away sin. But the works that we do, when we, Acts 3:19, repent and convert to keeping Yahweh's laws, that's what takes away sin. And of course, teaching has to go along with it. You know, a person can't just guess sin away or hope sin away. Teaching has to go along with it to show what sin is and what Yahweh expects for righteousness. And then a person has to start to practice those things. 1 Shochanan 3:7. Well, let's look back over to Ephesians. A body you have prepared for me. In Ephesians chapter 5. Yes, chapter 5. So a body is being prepared. And everybody needs a head. Everybody needs a head. And I mean that in more than one way. Everybody needs a head. You know, Yahshua's not like a head walking around saying, I don't need no body. You know, he knows that there is a body that's being prepared for him to do a job. You know, and even though we're, I don't know how many billions of miles away we are, you know, we're in unity with one another, including our head, Yahshua Messiah, when we do the works that he does, when we walk as he walks, when we live as he lived, when we love one another as he loved the called out ones. Praise Yahweh. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 23, it says, for the husband is the head of the wife, just as the Messiah is the head of the called out ones, and he is the savior of the body. Okay, he's the one through his work, through his actions, through his conduct, who is bringing salvation to the body that Yahweh has prepared for him. Let's see here, I don't want to get off track. Verse 28, it says, in the same way husbands are obligated to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife as himself loves himself. Indeed, no man ever hated his flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Yahshua does the called out ones. For we are members of his body. Now everybody has had pains from time to time in their body. A headache, a backache, you know, the common cold, allergies. Maybe your joints start aching when you get a little bit older. If you've done some work and you use muscles that you haven't used in a long time. And when we have that occur, you know, the first thought that comes into our mind, generally speaking, is, you know, to find some type of solution to ease the pain. You know, to take the pain away or to make it feel better. You know, the first thought usually is not to poke at it, you know, to hit it more, to make it feel more pain. And we have to think about that in a way of how we deal with one another. Because there are times when there are weaknesses and pains in the body. Now, I'm not saying your neighbor's a pain in the body, but we all have different levels of growth, different levels of understanding, okay? And if we notice that there is someone in the house of Yahweh, this body of Messiah, who has a pain, so to speak, or has trouble, or has difficulty, or is having maybe a little hard time overcoming something. Maybe they're a little bit snappy when they talk to you. Maybe they're not always a smile on their face, or whatever you perceive as a problem. as members of the body, we should lift them up. We should help them, right? Because we should suffer with one another. When one part of the body suffers, we should be looking to build that part up, to strengthen it. When you have a weak muscle, you strengthen that muscle so it can get on board with the rest of the body and be able to do the work that needs to be done. Let's look at Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12. But just keep that in mind there. In verse 4, Romans chapter 12, verse 4. It says, For as we have many members in one body, and all members do not have the same function, so we, being many, are one body in Messiah, and each one members, one belonging to another. One belonging to another. And of course, our attitudes, let's see here, our attitudes towards one another is very important in how we interact in displaying the character of Yahweh. In the fourth book of Yisrael, chapter 2, verse 35, Pastor says, as we'll see before this series of sermons is over, unless you develop this great love for the brother sitting next to you. Of course, you know, there's many offices, you know, there's many gifts, there's many opportunities in the kingdom of Yahweh. But that key thing I wanted you to remember there is that we, you know, we belong. We're belonging to one another. You know, we should be working with one another, standing up for one another, defending one another. I remember pastors talking about the children of Israel, or he said the Hebrew people, the Jews, he called them at that time. This was years ago in one of the sermons. And he said, you know, one thing I noticed about the people in Israel is that they stand up for one another. He says, we need to really get that in our for ourselves here, but they stand up for one another, no matter what tribe or what affiliation they have, what political stance they have. They stand up for one another. And if you've ever been to an area in a city, you know, like New York, or we had one in Cleveland, in different areas where they have what they call the Jewish community, you notice that those people, they flock together. You know, they support their community, they support one another, they take care of the poor and so forth. And that's the character of mind that we have to have amongst one another in this world. Remember, we're surrounded by God worship right now. No one loves us out there. The only love that we find is in the house of Yahweh. Now, we're going to teach them love and they're going to start loving us. About 2 billion people are loving us right now. But we're surrounded by darkness and God worship, so we do. We need to stick together. We need to hold up for one another. Even if you don't like the way that person looked at you, you know, overlook that look that he or she gave you and look at them with the face of Yahweh, and maybe they'll start looking back at you with that same face. The pastor says here, he says, unless you develop this great love for one another, for the brother sitting next to you, or the sister, behind you or in front of you, and unless you learn to love that person as yourself, then you're going to be severely tested. You know, and if you want the test, if you don't want the consequence, like when you have to discipline one of your children and they say, I don't want that all my life. Well, you got to make the right choice, son. You know, you have to follow the instructions and then you won't have it. You will never receive a consequence from Yahweh or from your head for doing the right thing. And that's the justice of Yahweh right there. You don't get that out in the world. But just for your notes, because we don't have much time here, I don't have much time. when Yahweh tells us to love one another, you know, he says, pastor says, you have to learn to love that person as yourself, then you're going to be, or you're going to be severely tested. I would refer you to go back to chapter 3 of the respect unit, which shows us, it talks about respecting one another, you know, respect for others. And under the on page 53, where it talks about familiarity breeds respect, it says there, respecting the people you know personally helps build strong, positive relationships. Becoming more familiar or comfortable, I'm skipping down a little bit here, with someone doesn't mean that you should ever lose respect. Although some people tend to become less courteous, caring, and polite to others they become very familiar with. This is unhealthy for any relationship. Remember that respect in all interactions promotes the relationship. So familiarity should breed respect. On page 54, it says, In order to build positive relationships and be respectful towards others, you must be aware of their needs and feelings. Now, you think about that as a body, you know, the mind, the head knows what the needs and the feelings of the body is. And he sends out messengers to take care of those things. Now, it's up to each and every one of those messengers to do their job. If the hand needs to, you know, comfort the elbow because it hit the funny bone, but it's not that funny, you know, you got tears in your eyes, then that hand needs to comfort the elbow. And when that hand comes to comfort the elbow, if you're the elbow, don't reject the hand, or you're not going to receive the comfort that you need. And as the hand comes to comfort the elbow, do it with respect and love that Yahweh shows in his how he interacted with mankind, and Yeshua gave the perfect example as well. But he says, become familiar with the people you interact with. Get to know and care about them. A respectful person is willing to go the extra mile in order to be courteous and caring with everyone. The important thing to do, to remember, is that becoming respectful takes time and commitment on your part and on the part of others. Excuse me. Each person must be willing to care about the feelings and the needs of others. And of course, as a body, we have to have this same mindset, brothers and sisters. And of course, in doing so, this is going to make us in complete unity with Yahweh and our head, Yeshua. So may Yahweh bless your understanding. If you please stand, I'd like to turn it over to the great Kohan Zephaniah Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace and blessings and mercy of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. We're going to continue along the lines of our training in the house of Yahweh and urging one another on towards love and righteous works, and how we can truly help others by being a friend and providing them encouragement. Now, seems like several years ago already, Pastor mentioned, he showed us this book here, The Children of the Dust Bowl, the true story of the school at Weed Patch Camp. And if you had the opportunity to read this book, you see that it follows the story of the Okies, those who lived in Oklahoma during a very hard time in their life, where the land was unfriendly at the time, and it was very hard. They had very hard times, and it shows the determination that they had, what they went through. And the story here, The Children of the Dust Bowl, it follows those who went from Oklahoma to California in hopes of a better life, so to speak. And we know that that was hard in itself, but it was very hard to stay in Oklahoma, as Pastor has explained. And that was Yahweh's will that his parents stuck it out there. And, you know, there is where he received a lot of training. But in this book, there is an example here that really stood out in my mind, and it's about a group of children, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, regarding Yeshua and the disciples, the apostles that he worked with, and how they accomplished many great things. There's an example here on page 50. This is chapter 7, if you'd like to go back and read it, and you'd have to read a little bit before then to get the gist of this, but the children were rejected. They didn't fit in. They didn't fit in the schools. Nobody wanted them. They were called dirty, nasty people. They were told to go home. Y'all need to, you know, just leave the area. And they were very persecuted. But there was a man who saw the value in these children. And it's an example of the peaceful solution in real life here on how this man helped this group of children. So he organized the building of a school, and everybody in the whole community was for it because they wanted all these Okie children out of their school anyway. So the man took these children, and there was about 50 of them, ages 6 to 16. So they were pretty small. They were pretty small children, some of them. You know, when you get up there in the teen years, you can do quite a bit, but they themselves built their own school. And there's an account here from Mr. Leo Hart. He was the one that put all this together. And I want you to pay attention to the words here that he used in this atmosphere that these children worked with. This is on the bottom of page 50. He said, "It was something to watch," Leo remembered. "It was the first time where they were working for something of their own. It was the first time that they could be proud, and use the word proud here, but pleased of who they were and what they were doing. Now, Pete Bancroft, the newly hired principal of the school, worked side by side with the teachers and the Okie kids, building the school and instilling in the Dust Bowl children a spirit of confidence and self-worth. And here's the real thing that stood out in my mind, because as I read this example, I'm thinking, you know, how do you get a group of people here, whether it be a group of children or a group of adults, to work so well together? Because it didn't take them years to build a school. They put it up in a few months. In a few months, they accomplished a lot. And this is what he said, quote, "There was no partiality," Leo said, "no embarrassment, no ridicule. Instead, there was friendship, understanding, guidance, and love." And if you look at our own lives and compare it to these Okie children, we really had nothing before we came to the house of Yahweh. Even if we thought we had something going, we really had nothing. Because without Yahweh, there is no hope for mankind. We would have been like any other earthly thing, as the scripture says. We would have lived out our life and then went back to the dust. But Yahweh is what offers us hope. So for the first time in their life, they had this hope. But the key here that I see is this environment that they had, where there was no embarrassment. You know, no one works well under embarrassment. No one works under ridicule. There's no friendship there. But this man offered them friendship. He offered them friendship, understanding, guidance, and love. So he saw the value in these children, and what they accomplished was amazing. I mean, they dug a 100-yard ditch in the first day and laid the water line, and by the second day they had running water. You know, and it's amazing how they worked, knowing that this was something for them. And although we might not be building a school that we can see the progress each and every day in what we're accomplishing, we're building something far greater. We're building this character that's going to be the family of priests who will rule as Yahweh rules, will teach others how to stop sin, will guide them for all eternity, and will love every minute of it as we're doing it. So we have a great future, but we can't forget that. You know, they saw their future in what they were doing here with this school. I'd like to read a couple quotes from the Peaceful Solution. Now, this first one here is from Chapter 4 of the Acceptance, and it talks about friends, because you see this man, you know, he was a great friend to him. And if you focus in there on the middle, it says, "Having friends who share the same moral values, who are compassionate and caring towards others, gives us a sense of belonging, and it creates a feeling of acceptance." And we all need that. We need that feeling of acceptance, and that we belong here, we have a part here, and we're part of this group. And remember, they didn't, you know, there was no partiality, no embarrassment, no ridicule. "Having close friends to share your ideas with, as well as life's ups and downs, can make a big difference in how you feel about yourself and the world around you." So creating that environment and the self-worth. And I'd like to look at another quote. This one is from the Respect Unit, page 9. And it's on this right environment and actually encouragement, because we need encouragement. Now, in the middle there, it says, "Each person's potential may not be immediately apparent." Just as we saw with the disciples, you know, they had their arguments, they had their growth period, their training period, and you didn't see truly their worth at the time or their true potential. But then later it became very evident. So each person's potential may not be immediately apparent. And that's why we show, or we teach, that all life has value. It doesn't matter who the person is. All life has value. But with the right environment and encouragement to build a positive character, everyone can develop their full potential over time. And I'd like to focus in a little bit on the encouragement and the friendship there. And if you would, turn over to Eob. If you turn over to the book of Eob. Now, Eob had a few friends. But as you see here, they really didn't do that great of a job with Eob. And you can see the difference. If you turn to Eob chapter 16, this is on page 420. And I want to remind everyone of what the scripture says, that Eob was perfect. That man was blameless. And remember the two things that Pastor taught us about Eob? He reverenced Yahweh and he shunned evil. You know, something that every one of us should strive to obtain, those two things, to reverence Yahweh and shun evil. So in verse 2 here, or verse 1 of chapter 16 of Eob, then Eob answered and said, "I've heard enough of these things. Miserable comforters are all of you. Will your arrogant speeches never end? What moves you to keep on arguing?" Okay, now we're getting to the point here. "I also could talk like you if you were in my place. I could make worthless speeches against you and shake my head at you, you know, almost in ridicule. But listen what this man said. Listen to what the brilliance and the intelligence that Eob said here on how to help someone. However, I would not do that. I would encourage you with my mouth, and comfort from my lips would bring you relief." And that's what we need. We need that encouragement and the comfort there. You know, we're not going to eliminate the tests and trials that we go through, because they're for our growth. They're for our benefit. It's to develop this character in us. And we're not going to get rid of the fact that Satan would like to wear out every single one of us through the mental attacks. But we can certainly combat those effects by the encouragement and the comfort that we provide to one another. We can do that. That's the goal. That's what we should be striving to do as we show that love towards one another. Okay, I'd like to look at a quote from Pastor here, because he speaks a lot about this friendship and what it means to be a friend. This is really only just one of them. You can find tons of quotes here on a true friend. But this is from the fourth book of Israel. It's Lying and Betrayal in the House of Yahweh, number 4, verse 59. "One of the greatest things I've come to realize in the few years that Yahweh has called me is that it's great to have a brother, but it's twice as great to have a brother who's a friend. We seem to have brothers who don't become friends with us, so we stay separated from them. This is what we've got to get out. We should become friends with everyone who Yahweh calls. To have a brother who is a friend unto you is one of the greatest things. There's a difference. There's a difference between the two. It's spoken of in your holy scriptures." And going back to that example from the Children of the Dust Bowl, it doesn't matter if it's a workplace, a school, a home, whatever environment it is. If you create those things that Mr. Leo Hart saw, you know, the friendship, the understanding, the love, you create this true friendship, an environment for someone to thrive and grow in. Now, Yeshua provided this. He was a friend to the apostles, and he gave them correction. And we're not saying that, you know, the friend doesn't provide correction. That's what a true friend does. They're going to, you know, if you're going off, they're going to show you and they're going to tell you and be that friend to you. But there's an example. If you turn to Yochanan chapter 21, at times the apostles, they felt like giving up, or the disciples. And this is one of the examples here in Yochanan chapter 21. Let's start in verse 2. "Well, gathered together were Simon Kepha," it's on page 838, "were Simon Kepha, Thomas called Didymus, Nathanael of Cana of Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples of his." Now notice verse 3. "Simon Kepha said to them, 'I'm going fishing.'" Guys, it was great working with you. I appreciate your, you know, the friendship, but I'm taking my old job back. And notice the influence there. "Well," they said to him, "we're also going with you." So they went out and immediately got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. You know, how befitting that they caught nothing. Now, when the morning had come, Yeshua stood on the shore, but the disciples did not know it was Yeshua. And this is after, you know, this was after Yeshua's resurrection. So he had given them instructions. He had given them the instructions. You can go back and read Matthew chapter 10 because they received the instructions on what they were supposed to do. It wasn't go back and go fishing, but it was to go and continue this work. Now, then Yeshua said to them, children. Okay, I never realized that it says right there. That would have been a big key on how old some of the disciples were. Do you have any food? They answered him, no. And he said to them, cast your net on the right side of the boat, and you will find. Okay, now just imagine this here. You're in a boat, you know, how wide is the boat? Maybe 8 feet, 10 feet? I mean, the fish swim all around. You know, thinking, okay, well, we're fishing over here. Are we really going to catch something right here on this side when, you know, we've been fishing all night? But nevertheless, hey, what can it hurt? So they cast, and then they were not able to draw it because of the multitude of fish. Because of this. You know, because of this. Was it because they said, man, you know, look at the success we had. We listened to this guy. It has to be Yeshua. Because of this, that disciple whom Yeshua loved said to Kepha, it is Yeshua. Now, when Simon Kepha heard that it was Yeshua, he put on his outer garment, for he was dressed for work, and he jumped into the sea. So he swam to shore. The other ones took a boat, and they came on shore with Yeshua. Now, if you think of how Yeshua had given them instructions, and he told them what they should have been doing, but they really were not practicing the obedience at that time, he really could have got on to them. He really could have got on to them right here, but I want to look at what Yeshua said and how he encouraged them, and that was the motivation that they needed. Verse 15, so when they had eaten, Yeshua said to Simon Kepha, now you could tell Simon Kepha was a little bit older than some of the others, Simon, son of Yonah, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, teacher, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. And we know that this went on, the, you know, two more times here. But what was Yeshua saying to Kepha? Do the work. Continue in the work. Keep going in the work. Follow those instructions that you have been given. And that was the encouragement there that Yeshua provided for them. He was a friend to them the entire way, never gave up on them in any way, but always encouraged them to make these positive, right choices. So in conclusion, I'd like to close with a quote quote from our great overseer, Yishuel Hawkins, because just as we see how Yeshua was always encouraging to those that he worked with, so is our teacher, the Last Day's Witness, always encouraging us. He never fails to give us this true encouragement. And this is from the 14th book of Israel, part 2. It should be up there on the screen now. Chapter 1, verse 5. It says in Hebrews, if you can you read that? In Hebrews 10:24, he says, and let us consider one another, how we may urge one another on towards love and righteous works. Well, that's what Yeshua himself, as high priest over the house of Yahweh right now, that's what he's doing when he shows us these things in the heavens. You understand? He's doing it, but he wants us to do it too. He wants us to encourage one another. So, you know, if you think back at that example there in this environment that was very conducive to learning that this man created, where there was no ridicule, there was no embarrassment, no partiality, it was very much full of encouragement and the love, the understanding, and so forth. That's the environment that all of us will thrive in. So let's encourage one another, let's provide those atmospheres, and we can all come to perfection, and we will make it in Yahweh's kingdom, and we will be that great family to teach others how to stop sin and forever enjoy life. May Yahweh bless all your understanding. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to someone who's been a great, great friend for many years, the great Kahan Shaul Hawkins. Shabbat Shalom!
You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Before we get started, I do have an announcement. I have in my hands the green ears of barley. Praise Yahweh. Or in Hebrew, Abib. So we will have the first moon of the year at the next new moon, Yahweh willing, tomorrow night, the moon of Yahweh, which is also the moon of Abib, because without Abib here, we can't declare the beginning of the year. Remember Deuteronomy 16:1. You have to see the green ears first. So we've got them, which is Abib in Hebrew is green ears, by the way. All right, we're going to continue, brothers and sisters, along this same line here of becoming like Yahshua, of preparing our hearts and minds for Yahshua's memorial and for this great kingdom of Yahweh here. And we're going to do what Yahshua did here. If you'll turn to Hebrews 12, and this is what Pastor's been doing with us all these years, is getting us to become just like Yahshua, which is a command, because we must follow in his footsteps, as the apostle wrote. But in Hebrews 12:2, looking to Yahshua, who was the first who was led and perfected by the faith, who for the joy that was set before him. Now, Yahshua didn't come down from heaven as an individual. You know, he wasn't pre-existent, and so he had to leave the kingdom behind and come to this junky place called earth and go through all this hell. And then he kept reminding himself, oh, I'm going home soon. No, he was born as a man and he grew up with the scriptures and the joy that was set before him. He didn't see it with his own eyes. He saw it in the prophecies. He saw the kingdom in the prophecies, just like we are. But he believed without seeing, and he knew, no matter what he was going through on earth, that he had a kingdom waiting for him. And that's what we're doing. The joy that's set before us is the great kingdom of Yahweh. We don't see it yet, but we read about it, we know about it, we believe without seeing because it's written for us. So he endured the sacrifice. Now, our sacrifice that we have to endure isn't nearly what Yahshua had to go through. All right? There's no way, no man on earth except Yahshua could have endured that sacrifice. And it was more than just the last 24 hours of his life. It was his whole life that he lived. And we must do our best and with all of our heart, might, and soul follow in those footsteps. But the punishment and the torture that he went through the last day of his time here on earth was extreme. And only he could go through it, and only he was prophesied to go through it. But he endured it. And so if he could endure what he went through, he's promising us that we can do the same. All right? And we have to set our minds to enduring this. But notice what he did. He despising the shame. Now, the shame is God worship. And this word despise means to think against. In other words, to reject, to not entertain in his mind, to not be mentally disposed, to not lean in any way toward God worship, to not let his mind go in any way to seek or be in agreement with or participate in God worship. So in order to become like Yahshua, we have to continue to get all God worship out of our lives. Now, as we've heard, and we heard it today, and we've been hearing it, about getting the names of the gods out of our mouths. But it goes way beyond that. We have to get the character and the actions of the gods completely out of our lives, out of our minds, out of us completely, in order to be like Yahshua, in order to completely despise the shame. The shame is for when they knew Yahweh, they didn't glorify him as Father, but they turned in worship to the gods. So we need to become like Yahshua, and be striving with every ounce of energy we have in order to fully and truly partake in Yahshua's memorial, in order to drink of that cup and eat that bread. We must, because we say to Yahweh and Yahshua that we will not choose to sin anymore when we partake of that bread and that cup. And this is what we got to get our mind on. In 1 Yochanan 2:6, he says, He who says or claims to abide in him is himself obligated to walk exactly as he walked. He's talking about the complete obedience here. We're obligated. Now look at 1 Kefa 2 in verse 21. He says, in the same way the Messiah also suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was guile found in his mouth. Now, guile means deceit, cunning craftiness and deceit. And we're going to see an example of deceit, or what is deceiving here in a moment. But we're going to cover part of the law in Exodus 20:15, a portion of it that we might not even be fully aware of. You know, but we need to make ourselves aware of these things, and we need to turn our lives around if we're lacking. This is overcoming. This is true love. Remember, true love is correction. Correction given in love, not condemnation. Yahshua, when we make a mistake, he doesn't kick us out. He says, come and confess it and overcome it and get the instruction, get the help you need, seek the help. But in Exodus 20 and verse 15, something we're all very familiar with, you shall not steal. Well, let's just review the word steal. It's word number 1589. It means to thieve, by implication to deceive. Deceit. So we see Yahshua never stole. All right? He didn't even think and seize upon that it would be, you know, even though he knew the prophecies concerning himself, he was raised on them, he had full knowledge of them, he knew what he had to do, he knew what he would become. He never thought about being equal with Yahweh. Never once crossed his mind to be equal with Yahweh. All right? Which, you know, to a carnal-minded person, well, you tell him, well, you're going to be, I'm going to give you the whole universe to rule over. Well, you must think you're something pretty big after a while when you keep meditating on that, and you may get too big for your britches. Not Yahshua. And it means to carry away secretly. Secretly, to get by stealth, which means secret, without the owner's knowledge. Now, even our kindergartners here, they know what it means to steal, which is to take or touch anything without asking for permission. Turn over to 1 Corinthians 6. So important that we not be a thief. Here, 1 Corinthians 6, in verse 9. Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of Yahweh? Well, isn't that what we are here for, to inherit the kingdom of Yahweh? So if we fall into any of these categories, we need to do something about it. Do not deceive yourselves, neither fornicators or God worshipers. Let's jump down to verse 10. Nor thieves, nor covetous will inherit the kingdom of Yahweh. And such were some of you. But now you are washed and now you are sanctified. We're in that process of becoming completely sanctified, set apart for Yahweh's holy use in the kingdom. Yes, here on earth, but our real big job is what occurs after mankind's governments come to an end. Okay? Wow. All right, in Malachi 3:8, he asks, will a man rob Yahweh? Will a man steal from Yahweh? And how will you steal from Yahweh? He says, in tithes and offerings. In tithes and offerings. Put down Leviticus 26:30 And write that in your notes, and you'll see that all the tithe, notice, belongs to Yahweh. It is holy to Yahweh. Yes, we must pay our tithes, and we only pay those tithes to the house of Yahweh, the only prophesied work. The tithes belong to Yahweh. They're not ours. They never were ours. That 10% first tithe, 10% second tithe, the 10% on a third tithe year, they never were ours. They always belong to Yahweh, and we must return what is His. And if we don't, we're stealing. Right? Everybody can see that plainly? Praise Yahweh. Well, I don't know if you knew this or not, but there's other ways that we can steal the tithes and offerings. All right? And we might not be aware of it, but we need to get this straight so that we can be just like Yahshua. We need to be aware that all the materials and supplies that are used in the work of Yahweh are bought with tithes and offerings. Did you realize that? They're bought with tithes and offerings. So they belong to Yahweh. And they have to be used in a certain way. And with permission. Now there's only one man on the face of this earth that Yahweh has given authority to, through prophecy, to decide how the tithes and offerings are used. So if that tithe and offering is turned into lumber, or sheet metal, or paper, or ink, or whatever, does that change the fact that they are still Yahweh's? Does that change the fact of who decides how they were to be used, or disposed of, or dispensed with? No. And Yahweh shows in prophecy, you know, that the priest of Yahweh, you know, if you go back and see who was the first Hawkins in the house of Yahweh. We have to really go back. The Hawkins, remember, is Hawkahan. That's another Hebrew word, means the priest. He is the priest of Yahweh. And Yahweh shows in prophecy that this man alone is faithful in all my house. And he testifies that who as I, in other words, he's going to use my wisdom and set all things in order in the house of Yahweh. He sets it in order. He keeps it straight. He rules as Yahweh. Now, if we, the donkeys, take and use the materials and supplies for anything other than the intended purpose, what are we doing? Stealing. Praise Yahweh. Not praise Yahweh. We don't want to steal, but praise Yahweh that we all understand that point. All right? Now, how do we know what the intended purpose is? We ask. And there's a little form that we have that tells you, here, go and do this with this stuff. It's called a work order. All right? That's how we know what we're using it for. Now, I'll give you another example, like a gas allowance. If you get a gas allowance, we may only use that gas to go to the job site that we are assigned to go to and back again. If we may not run to town, do personal errands, personal shopping, or anything outside the work that we were assigned to do with that gas. If we do anything else, what are we doing? We repent. But praise Yahweh for the answer. All right, if we work on a project using building supplies of any kind, and this is a part where I read you the entire inventory of Lowe's, okay? All right, Lowe's, Home Depot, Wally World, all these places. Wherever the supplies came from, Metal Mart or wherever. If we use any of these supplies, we are using Yahweh's tithes and offerings. And we have to guard and keep these things with the same mindset that Pastor has in guarding and keeping Yahweh's way. When the job is completed, we the donkeys do not have the authority to do just whatever we want to do with those leftover materials. If they're left over from the job, are they no longer tithes and offerings? No, they're still Yahweh's tithes and offerings. So what do we do with the leftover materials? We ask and we do whatever we're told to do with them. Do we decide on our own what's to be done with them? Can we take them and use them on our own dwellings without asking? No. What if it's a house of Yahweh dwelling we live in? Can't we take it and use it there? Can't we build an addition onto the house of Yahweh dwelling we live in? Or what about building another building right next to it? It's all for the house of Yahweh, right? Can we do that without a permit? No, brothers and sisters, we need to go back to the very most basic lesson in the peaceful solution, which you've already said, and that is ask. Ask. That's the simple solution to the whole problem. When that thought enters into your mind, I'm going to take these leftover materials and use them. I'll decide how they're being used. Yahshua wouldn't do that. He wouldn't elevate himself to be equal. And you know, this goes for every one of us, brothers and sisters. We all have a head over us. The Kohans, the Kohanas, the judges. We must all ask a higher authority regarding the use of Yahweh's tithes and offerings. All right, this is what the kingdom is all about. Now, turn over to Leviticus 1. I'm going to show you an example in the law. See if this resonates with our minds here. Leviticus 1:3. If his offering is a burnt offering from the herd, let him offer a male without blemish. He shall offer it of his own free will at the door of the tent of meeting in front of Yahweh. Notice verse 4. He puts his hand on the head, and it will be accepted on his behalf. Verse 6, he shall skin the burnt offering and cut it into his pieces. They lay the wood in order on the fire. Verse 7, verse 8, arrange all the pieces, the head and the fat, and on the wood which is on the fire on the altar. Wash its entrails and its legs with water. Then the priest shall burn. What's that word? He shall burn what? All. Well, if they're going to burn it up, you know, I don't see why you can't take a leg if it's just going to get burned up anyways. You know, would that matter to Yahweh? It's all going to be turned to ash. Why can't I take a little piece of this thing here, a leg or a thigh or a shoulder? Why can't I take some of this? It's going to be burned up. Brothers and sisters, when instruction is given to take something to the burn pit or the trash pile to be discarded, do we have the right to pull it out and say, no, this doesn't need to be burned. Look, this is perfectly usable. I can make something out of this. Do we have the right to take that out without asking? No, no way. What would it be if we did that? Great, let's hear it again. Stealing. Stealing. It's stealing. It doesn't matter. When Yahweh told the priest to burn that whole thing, wow, look at that cow. Look at all the people that could feed. Look at all what we could do with it. No, he said, burn it. So when that decision is made, we need to abide by it and agree with it and support it. And so I hope we're all clear here that to use any of the materials or supplies supplied by the work of Yahweh in any other job than what it's intended, what we're instructed to do, what the work order said to do, we must have another work order and a permit. Okay, we're all clear on that? You know, we need to get this and all stealing out of our lives. And if we're in this situation, if we're guilty of any of this, we need to get it fixed here before Yahshua's memorial so that we can be in complete unity. Turn over to Proverbs 29. Proverbs 29 and verse 24. Whoever is a partner with a thief hates his own life. And he who hears the curse of the law, he hears the curse of the law. That is, every breaking of the law, every sin, automatically brings a curse. He hears the curse of the law, but he does not confess. He does not repent. Look at verse 22. Because if you're angry with this, an angry man stirs up strife, and a furious man abounds in transgression. A man's pride, you know, if we refuse to take these simple instructions, a man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will be held up, just like Yahshua was. And though Yahshua, the last 24 hours of his life, did that seem like, well, man, I'm about to be soon to be King of Kings here. What a great intro to this new job. You know, this is the welcoming committee here to my new job. It's in prophecy, and you know, so you got to wait till Yahweh lifts you up, just like Yahshua did. Turn to Psalms 50. And look at verse 18. When you saw a thief, you consented with him. You consented. You went along with it. You might have even bought from him or partook in that thievery. And he says in verse 16, what right do you have to declare my statutes or to take my covenant in your mouth, since you hate my instruction and have cast my words behind you? Brothers and sisters, let's never be in that position. Turn over to Zechariah. Zechariah 5, in verse 3. And then he said to me, this is the curse that goes out over the face of the whole earth. Remember that this earth is under a curse because Yahweh's laws were cast aside. Mankind cast them aside, killed every one of Yahweh's servants, and believed Satan when she said, you will surely not die. There's no harm in this. What could it hurt? They're going to burn that animal up anyways. Go ahead, take a piece of that leg. Nobody will know. Remember the definition of steal: secretly, stealth, without the owner's knowledge. You think it's without the owner's knowledge, but Yahweh sees everything. Everyone who steals will be cut off according to what is written on this side of the scroll. And everyone who vows falsely, if we tell Yahweh, well, Yahweh, I repent, I'm never going to sin again, and then we go back to this, that is vowing falsely. We'll be cut off according to what is written on the other side. So flip it whichever way you will with this, but we're going to be cut off if we follow that. Turn over to Ephesians 4. Because Yahweh just doesn't, you know, point out what we do wrong and chew us out. He gives us a way to make it right. In verse 4 and verse 28, he says, let him who stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands at something proper, that he may have something to give to him who has need. When we steal like this, brothers and sisters, we're showing total selfishness. And remember, selfishness is part of the 666 system. We can't partake of the cup of Yahweh and the cup of demons at the same time. And we can't sit here at Yahshua's memorial and eat that bread and drink that cup, which we must, and then turn around and break Yahweh's laws in this way. So if we're in this situation, we need to go down to the South office, if we're guilty of doing this, and make arrangements to take care of the restitution. All right, you'll get further instruction on it. But in Leviticus 5, it shows that a thief, let's look there. Leviticus 5. We don't have to bring an animal. All right. If a person commits a trespass in verse 15 and sins ignorantly, and now there won't be any more sinning ignorantly about it because we're all aware that this would be stealing, in regard to any of Yahweh's holy things. All right, and then in verse 16, the first part, and he shall make restitution for the harm, notice the harm he has done in regard to the holy thing. Because that holy thing, every part of the work, you know, even though we may not see it directly, brothers and sisters, but every part of the work is designed to bring forth this kingdom, to prepare a place for the people that are coming, that they can learn, the multitudes that are coming, that they can learn Yahweh's way and have the same opportunity we have for this great kingdom. But when we don't show this care and concern, if you look at 1 Corinthians 11, as Shaul said, we're not discerning the body. You don't have to turn there. We got more to cover. But if we don't make this right, if we don't make an effort to make the restitution and get this thing right and get it straightened out, this blood of Yahshua that we need desperately will not cover us. Remember, only those that survived in Moshe's day, they only survived if they had the blood that was commanded on that doorpost. Well, Yahshua is the Lamb, and it's His blood that's covering us, but only if we do as He instructs and do as He set the example and despise the shame of God worship. Get it completely away from us. Get it out of our lives. You know, Shaul also wrote that we were bought with a price, but when we steal, we sell ourselves back to Satan. And then we want to sit in the sanctuary at the feast and pretend like we belong to Yahweh. It's not going to work. We need to get our mind off of selfishness and off of ourselves and lay our lives down for the work of Yahweh. You know, we are blessed to be able to sacrifice and do without in the work of Yahweh and not have to suffer the exact things that Yahshua Himself suffered for us. You know, and Yahweh's going to give us the universe, brothers and sisters. Is it really worth it to throw it away by stealing what belongs to Yahweh? You know, when we got the whole universe, that joy set before us. And remember, the universe is ever expanding. So our blessings are going to ever expand and increase and grow. Don't throw it away. Don't turn in stupidity with an act like this, you know, and ruin it and throw it all away. You know, and one last thing here, turn over to Leviticus 23. You know, speaking of sitting at the feast and keeping a feast, there's one thing we need to keep in mind here. And as Deuteronomy 12 says, you know, only at the place I will choose, and there should be no doubt if you're sitting in this room or you're watching this on the screen, wherever you are in the world, there should be no doubt in your mind that this is the place. And he instructs us, starting the whole chapter, Leviticus 23. I don't have time to read it all right now, so you may want to take some time and refresh your memory on that. But look at verse 39 there in the middle. He says, now this is concerning the Feast of Tabernacles. So on the 15th day of the seventh moon, when you have gathered in the fruit of your land, you must keep a feast. He gives a little detail on keeping the feast, and it just doesn't apply to tabernacles. It applies to unleavened bread that's coming up also. You must keep the feast unto Yahweh for 7 days. And then, of course, on the 8th day, there'll be a holy convocation as well. But you've got to keep it to Yahweh for the entire time. The entire time. So this means during the feast, don't go back to your worldly jobs. You can't go back to your worldly jobs on the days in between the first and last days, the non-Sabbath days, and go do your worldly work. And that applies whether you go to a workplace out in the world or whether you sit at home on your computer with the phone or whatever it is. You cannot do those jobs during these days that we're told to keep a feast to Yahweh. It's not keeping it to Yahweh if we go back to these worldly jobs, like Kepha was almost tempted to do there, as we heard in the last sermon. All right, he was going to go back to his old worldly job. And Yahshua, what did Yahshua say to him? Feed my sheep. And this is what we need to do at the feast. There's plenty of work here at the feast, feeding the people, serving the people, doing what Yahweh and Yahshua did, and that's serving the people, serving the body. That's truly showing care and concern. You know, when I first came here in the late 80s, I heard pastor say, and you may have heard the sermon, the question to your employer isn't, may I have the feast off? That's not the question. There is no question. You're going to take the feast off. That needs to be your attitude. The only question was, will I have a job when I get back? And if not, well, so be it. It's their loss. But you're not going to miss Yahweh's feast, was what was put in my mind growing up here in the house of Yahweh. So let's, for our closing scripture, look at 1 Corinthians 5. As we work to get the leavening out, we got a little over 2 weeks here. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 6. Your arrogant pride is not righteous. No, when we hear the correction, we need to humbly take it and work to overcome and ask for help if you don't know how to do it. It's not a punishment. We need to fix our lives and make them like Yahshua. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole batch of dough? Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new batch, since you are unleavened. That is, becoming without sin. For truly, Yahshua, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast, not go to our stupid worldly jobs. Here, there's always, you can do that after the feast. Not with the old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness. No, we need to get all these things out. But with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth, all according to Yahweh's laws, and sincerely, as we mean it. We have to show Yahweh that we really, really love His house and His laws more than all else, and we have to mean it. May Yahweh bless your understanding. If everyone will please stand, we'll now turn the services over to the great Son of Israel, Abel, for closing prayer.